This hour of Cairo Nights is brought to you by Washington Energy Services.
Broadcasting live from the Carter Subaru Studios, you're listening to Cairo Nights. Happy Wednesday, y'all. I am G. Scott. At 9 o'clock, we'll have Seahawks legends, former Seattle Seahawks linebacker Leroy Hill will be my guest at 9 o'clock. Stick around for that. But right now, recently, I have been listening to an amazing podcast. I mean, it's been phenomenal, fantastic. You guys know of the story of Jim Jones. Jim Jones was a cult leader that was in charge when the 900 plus people died in 1978. I ain't gonna tell you how old I was. However, because they were drinking Flavor-Aid, by the way, I found that out because I was listening to the podcast. It was Flavor-Aid. This podcast right here explores the truth about victims of the Jonestown Massacre. The host is Amanda Knox. She goes beyond the headlines and the snap judgments as she has her own unique perspective when it comes to the justice system. She joins me now. Amanda, means the world that you join me. Thank you. How are you?
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely.
It's great to be back here talking to you.
No doubt. Thank you for coming back. Let's get right into it. I just recently saw some stuff on the Jonestown Massacre and a lot of true crimes I'm really into. Why choose this project right here?
Well, yes, what you were seeing was the news for the 40th anniversary. It's been 40 years, and there was a big reunion among the survivors, came together to celebrate the lives of the people of the People's Temple. I was brought into this project actually by Sundance. They had done a documentary, and they asked me to host a podcast series where I would have the opportunity to speak with survivors. And I was really, really drawn in by this project because what occurred to me was I had never heard about this story except, you know, the Kool-Aid jokes. And the idea of talking to survivors and being able to get a glimpse into the real humanity beyond this, like, easy stereotypical portrayal of human beings who had been through a tragedy really drew me in. And I was blown away. I really was.
Now, in listening to your podcast, I'm all caught up in everything. There's a lot of things that I got to learn so far. And I even watched the 40th anniversary deal, but I did not. For some reason, I must have missed me. I didn't know he was from Indianapolis. I didn't know how he felt about integration. I didn't know that one time that he's like, hey, I choose not to get help at a hospital because they didn't allow blacks there. I didn't know any of those things. Mm-hmm. In doing this podcast, what are some of the things that stand out to you that you learned that you were like, wow, about?
Oh, my God. Wow. There were many things. One is that there's this piecemeal portrayal of Jim Jones as this, like, demagogue who murdered over 900 people. And that was an oversimplified version of him. Like, there was a reason why so many intelligent and compassionate human beings gave up so much of their lives in order to follow him, because he set an example. And I think the most shocking moment for me when I was interviewing various survivors of the People's Temple or people who had known Jim Jones personally was when I spoke to one of his old mentors from back in Indiana, who was this pastor. And when I asked him about this issue of, well, do we say that a person who committed such this terrible crime, is he a monster, or do we have to look at him as his full human self as he existed throughout time? And I was expecting, you know, the pastor to say, well, you know, the story is more complicated, because, you know, that's one of the true things about life. A story is generally more complicated than it's portrayed. His response was even a step further than that, though. He said that Jim Jones had no choice but to orchestrate this mass suicide because the world around him was refusing to allow his vision of reality to take place. And I still to this day didn't even, like, I don't know what, like, I sat there and I was like, wow, I don't agree. agree with you, but right. That's very interesting that right, you say right. that.
You know, yes, no doubt about it. I know you're sitting there like I'm listening, like, oh, jaw dropped, okay.
Uh-huh.
But that's one of the things that, at least for me, that I took out of it. And I'd shared something earlier in the 7 o'clock hour with Drew. And you had mentioned this, and you said you had heard it from someone, but I assumed that you had heard it from Brian Stevenson from the book Just Mercy. Right?
One of my heroes.
Yes, when he talks about the fact that are you better than your worst moment, right? And
yeah.
in this case of Jim Jones is he had a beginning, right? Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, Jim Jones, if you find out about Jim Jones then, he was a good guy,
mm-hmm.
but usually power, drugs, and things can kind of sway you going forward and everything. You talk to his son, Jim Jones
Jr.,
who, by the way, that story, he adopted a black child,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted his black child to be Jim Jones Jr. so he could show everyone.
Yeah.
What was Jim Jones Jr. like?
Oh, my gosh. I had the best connection with Jim Jones Jr. We hit it off immediately. It was like we were two hens in, you know, the little hen house, just like cackling to each other. It was great. He was so sweet. And I think I was really struck by the complex emotional place that he was in. He clearly, you know, 40 years have gone by. He was given, I mean, he was the first black boy to ever be adopted by a white family in Indiana. Mm-hmm. That was just not done. He was given a better life than he would have otherwise had. And yet when he was 19 years old, his dad sent him a radio transmission saying, okay, son, it's time to kill yourself now for the cause. So do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the courage to not only tell his father no, but also to spend the rest, like the next days, calling all the other People's Temple locations, trying to convince these other People's Temple locations who had received the radio transmission to not kill themselves. He spent those next days knowing that like his family members were dying, like trying to save people's lives. Like he is a hero and he carries his father's name and he carries his father's legacy alongside him. And I had never heard of Jim Jones Jr.'s mm-hmm. story.
Neither have I. As a matter of fact, I just found out, let me be honest with you, on Sunday that Jim Jones Jr. existed.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're joined here by Amanda Knox. She is does the podcast for The Truth About True Crime, talking about the Jones Massacre. And, you know, hearing you do this and hearing you go through the stories and the conversations and going through the tabloids and considering that in October of this year marked 7 years that you walked away from prison in a time where most people's opinions of you and your situation usually weren't theirs. It usually came from the tabloids or it came from their friend. More often than not, most people's opinion on situations don't come from the court documents themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When you walked away and you celebrate 7 years and you're doing this story and everything, how does it help you continue forward?
Oh, I didn't know that it would help me so much. It helps me feel less alone. I don't know if I've ever talked to you about this before, G, but when I first came home from all of this, I really did not want this to have been my life. It seemed like this random thing that had just happened to me and fallen upon me. And it didn't feel like it belonged to me, that I had anything to do with it or deserved what I had been given. And I fought back against it a long time about I am this wrongfully convicted person who now goes through the world as an exoneree. Like, what do I do with that information? It's not something that I did or built or put into the world. And I struggled for a long time to understand what it meant to me and what it meant my role was in the world, and what I came away with was my acute sensitivity to the way that human beings tend to get lost in the stories. You know, I get into debates and even heated debates with a lot of people that I care about when I see that there's been an easy judgment laid down on someone who happens to be in the headlines. And when it came to Jim Jones and the People's Temple, the people who survived the massacre and those who didn't, something that I saw when I started asking people about it, I said, hey, I'm going to be talking to survivors. What I heard back was, oh, I don't know how people could ever do that. They murdered themselves. They murdered their children. They're not like us. They're not people like us. Jim Jones isn't a person like us. They're different kinds of people. And I think that that's an easy answer. The answer that, you know, there are people who are a part of crazy crime stories, and then there are the rest of us. And me, I'm just one of those, the rest of us, who ended up in a crazy, tragic, true crime story. And oh, wow, that gave me the insight that we're all potentially that person in that story. And it made me think that if we are turning ourselves off to the experiences and perspectives of those who are going through those tragedies or have survived them, then we're losing a tragic knowledge about ourselves. And it's made me, you know, for myself, I'm reaching out to those people to try to get answers. And if other people want to listen, I'm grateful.
Right.
So.
And I think it would be much easier and probably more convenient for a lot of people to just look at somebody like Jim Jones and say, that person is different from me. I will never know or share any common traits with a person like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I wonder if these days, because I'm sure people do have conversations where they're like, that sort of thing would never happen these days.
it's kind of happening right now.
When you think about just kind of the idea of a cult, you think about this idea of people going to one place. But if you introduce something like the internet and allow people to kind of spread out, just because they're not gathering in one place doesn't mean they haven't found a community that could be just as entrenching as going somewhere physically.
Right, and a cult doesn't have to be under the name of religion either.
Right.
There's ideological cults. And interestingly enough, Jim Jones, yes, he was a kind of religious leader, but really his religion was socialism. Mm. And he practiced what he preached. And he, you know, gave up. He sacrificed so much of himself. And he was not asking of his followers anything that he wouldn't ask of himself. He then kind of went off the deep end. But, you know, like, you don't have to be a religious leader to be a cult leader. You can be a politician, say.
Yes, very true about that. Well, we got about 30 seconds. And 30 seconds, by the way, the truth about true crime is part of the Sundance TV. It's an awesome podcast. You can go to your normal podcast. You can go right to it. You can find it. It is amazing. Before I let you go, congratulations. Your engagement. Talk about that really quick. Come on now. Amanda Knox is engaged.
Thank you. Yay! I am so excited. I'm still a little bit flabbergasted that I feel so lucky. I honestly feel bad for everyone else because I have the best partner ever and he gives me the best presents ever. Mm. And we keep upping the stakes. It all started when for his first birthday when we were dating, I set up this whole like LARPing adventure where I gave him like the cyber outfit and we all like, he had to battle like cyber warriors in like real time up on Cap Hill. And from then on out, it's been like birthdays, Christmas, just upping the stakes. And then it culminated in this crash in Wonderland.
Okay, who's the ultimate topper, though?
I mean, he had a meteorite crash into my backyard.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I ain't gonna lie. He is pretty cool. Trust me. And I love the way. But for those who know that G. Scott loves fashion, he loves fashion, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a lot of fun.
Amanda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Means the world. Hey, coming up next, we got an awesome, amazing artist that's going to be joining Cairo Nights. His name, Cal Bonner. He's here locally, and he's got some cool stuff. Find out how he painted the shoes for the Mike Hawes, Mike Cleats, for some of the Seahawk players. We do that next. Listen to Cairo Nights. I am G. Scott. I am G. Scott. Happy Wednesday, y'all. What an exciting week it has been already. Of course, the Monday night game. Whenever the Seahawks win, it always starts the week off right. But I'm excited about my next guest. He's somebody, I can't lie. I was on social media. I was on Facebook. Like y'all know, I always hang out on the Facebook. And I'm on Facebook and I see this young man. His name's Cal Bonner. And I see this drawing that he made of Gucci Mane, and then I saw that, and I saw some of his work, and I'm like, wow. Then come to find out, he was one of the folks that kind of helped design the cleats for Brandon Jackson of the Seattle Seahawks for My Cause, My Cleats. And his work is amazing, and I wanted to bring him in studio to hang out with us on Cairo Nights, and he joins me now. Cal, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it, man. First of all, I got to tell you, I love your work. I think what you do is an amazing deal, and you cannot be kept a secret no longer here in Seattle.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate it.
How long you been doing this, man?
I've been painting. I really just recently started painting, probably like 2 years ago.
Man, ain't no way in the world you just started 2 years ago.
Yeah, I promise you.
Now, what inspired you? Tell us about the first time. So it just started 2 years ago. By the way, you look like you've been painting your whole life, but you just started 2 years ago. What is it that made you start painting?
Okay, well, I'm a tattoo artist. That's my foundation of art is tattooing. I'm a tattoo artist, and I had a tattoo shop in Berrien, and I just know, like, I watched a lot of YouTube videos on tattooing, and it brings up that painting helps, you know, painting helps your shading on your tattoo. And so I started painting, and I started paying attention to other artists on Instagram and stuff. And I just wanted to, you know, perfect it.
Right. And so you have a tattoo place over in Berrien,
yep,
your tattoo
shop.
Artist tattoo
yep.
shop. And the name of your tattoo shop is?
It's Visions Inc.
Visions Inc.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times when folks want to come and get them a tattoo, they come inside Visions Inc.
Yeah.
They ask for Cal. And then and do you ever have some times when folks come in there and they don't even know what they want?
Yes, all the time. All the time. They just want a tattoo just because, you know, it's Visions. You know, it's Visions Inc. So
right.
Everybody just wants a tattoo. So.
Right. So when you're not doing tattoos, you're doing some paintings
yes.
and things. And so I'm seeing right now you got Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah.
You got a picture of him in a Magic Johnson jersey.
Yeah.
That is amazing right there, the work that you do. And by the way, you guys can check my Twitter, at the G Scott. You'll see it on there. Check my Instagram, G Scott. You're going to see it all over. Facebook, you're going to see it all over.
Yeah.
You can go to all of my social media and see some of the examples of his work. We're joined here by Cal Bonner here on Cairo Nights. And I got to ask you, Cal, so your work so far, how did it come to be where Brandon Jackson of the Seattle Seahawks asked you to design his cleats for My Cause, My Cleats?
Yeah, I met him before, and I didn't know that he was... I didn't know he played for the Seahawks.
Right.
I just was introduced to him. And then I followed him on Instagram, and he followed me back. And then I seen him that he just posted some cleats with somebody else. Somebody else did. And I said, man, if you got some extra cleats, you know, I hit him in his DM and said, if you got some extra cleats, you know, let's work. And then he said, yeah, I'll get back with you. And then it was crazy because I just had a long day. And then out of nowhere, my spirits just got lifted because he hit me in the DM and he was like, yo, I got an idea for some cleats. And I was like, whoa. So I hit him back instantly, you know, and it's just like, it was crazy. That's just how he clicked. And it just happened. He came to the shop, you know, he gave me the cleats. 3 days later, we met up back up and he was wild.
Right. So, Cal, take us back to, okay, I know you started painting 2 years ago, but obviously you didn't start drawing 2 years ago.
No.
Tell us about what that was like coming up as a child, drawing and things.
Man, it's crazy because a lot of people would be like, bro, you're lying, because I didn't really draw like that when I was younger.
Really?
Nah, it really got, I really started to draw like seriously in college. Because, I mean, I did doodle here and there, but the real serious drawing, I didn't start till college because I was playing basketball and I was at the peak of my game. And like I'm putting towards art, I was putting it to my game in basketball, and I put hours and hours and hours in. And then right before my first real college game, I fractured my shin. and I was out for the season, and I fell into depression, and I just started drawing my feelings.
Really?
And my and then I was like really sad, and my roommate, like my best friend Antoine, he was just like, man, he was like, bro, you got to get out this funk, bro. You could be a tattoo artist or something, you know what I mean? Because I was really depressed, because, you know, my family, like, I'm like the golden child. They were waiting on me, you know what I'm saying, to make something happen. So I was just like, man, they don't make enough money, you know, I don't want to be a tattoo artist. And he showed me that somebody made like $3,000 in a day. And I was like, well, it only takes $1,000 a day to make $1 million in a year. So you feel me? I put that into perspective. And,
right.
And then after that, I put on Facebook, cause I was already putting my drawings up on Facebook. And then on Facebook, I got so much love from the city, like, yeah, you should be a tattoo artist. You should do it. And then my best friend's lady at the time, she sent just out of nowhere and sent me $100 for my tattoo kit. And after that, I never looked back.
Never looked back, huh? Yeah. We're joined here by Kyle Bonner. He's joining Cairo Nights because he is an amazing artist. His paintings are amazing, and he just had the opportunity to help design one of the Seahawks cleats, Brandon Jackson, his cleats for the My Cause, My Cleats. That is donations that goes towards fighting cancer. And what's your goals from here on out, right? So here we are today. Mm-hmm. You're making these amazing paintings. What are some things that Cal wants to do with all of this work? What's your plans for the future?
I want to make my mom proud. You know what I mean? That's the main thing. And then, I mean, I want to, of course, expand. You know, I want to employ others. Others of our kind as well, too. But I want to make sure, like, pretty much just touch the next generation. Just let them know that you don't have to be a basketball player or a rapper. You don't got to do nothing out of the ordinary. You can really just be yourself and make money that way, too.
You know, I'm glad you bring that up, Cal. You bring up the fact that you don't have to be an athlete, mm-hmm, or a rapper. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens is in the black community, mm-hmm, right, a lot of times we look to those things. We look to sports. We, yeah, look to entertainment. And we suppress, or we don't find out about our talents.
Right.
And you found out about your talent when you got hurt.
Yeah, through hardship,
yeah, through depression, and you found like you had this amazing gift. We all, Jay-Z said, we all have a gift. We just got to find out,
exactly,
what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you've been doing this. So you got Gucci Mane. He got him to sign it. So
yeah,
tell him,
man,
what it was like. You showed up at the end of his concert. I saw you standing out there,
uh-huh,
and you showed him that, and he signed it.
Man, it was, I'm not going to lie, it was a dream come true for real, because I was really, as I'm painting it, as you can see on the paint, it says 11/6/17. That was last year, and I painted this last year. You can see the progress,
right,
in the paintings too. So it's like, I painted this last year, and a lot of people wanted it, you know, because Gucci got a lot of fans. A lot of people asked, you know, thousands of dollars, and I was just like, nah, I can't, bro. Like, as bad as I want to, I just can't. And then I was just knowing he was going to sign it. I knew I was going to run, like, we was going to cross paths at one point. I don't know how, but I just knew it, because, I mean, just what he goes through, like, how he's, what he, everything he just pretty much go through as a rapper, you know, I just like his lifestyle,
right,
like how he's living with his lady, and,
right,
you know, that inspired me to do the painting.
For those listening right now, and for those that want to have an opportunity to get some of your, Cairo Nights, y'all know he has to be amazing for me to bring him on. If anybody wants to have some of your work, yes, how can they get in touch with you?
Social media. I'm always on social media. Like, my phone's always dead because I'm on it. So
Cal Bonner.
Yes.
C-A-L.
Yeah.
B-O-N-N-E-R.
Yeah.
Cal Bonner. He's on Facebook.
Yeah.
You're on Instagram.
Yeah. Twitter and Instagram is Vision4RM_CalB.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, Cal, man, don't stay a stranger, brother. Man, no, I don't stay a stranger. I got to get you coming in. And just remember, when you blow up big, don't, make sure you come back and give interviews with Cairo Knights.
Because
you're going to blow up big. I'm telling you right now.
I hope so.
All right, that's Cal Bonner joining us right there. And get an opportunity. Check my social media or check his, Cal Bonner, on social media to check out some of his work. It is amazing. You guys have been listening to Cairo Knights. Coming up next, it is time for Question of the Day. You listen to Cairo Knights. I am G. Scott. Welcome back in to Cairo Knights, ladies and gentlemen. I am G. Scott. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Seahawks legends, former Seattle Seahawks linebacker Leroy Hill will be joining the show for Seahawks Legends. Make sure you tune in to listen to that. But right now, Drew, what do you got?
Now, the Cairo Knights question of the day.
All right, your question of the day is, this is a musical one that we have here. What is your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, karaoke. Holidays bring a matter of fact, I've been really into karaoke lately. Shout out to all my friends that's been listening. My go-to.
You could point, by the way, David is on the ready, so you just point at him when you want your song.
All right. Little Sweet Home Alabama.
Really?
Really.
Oh, yeah.
This is your jam.
Mmm. Yeah.
Is this a song that, like, you grew up feeling like you could always sing?
No. No. I still can't sing. But let me tell you something. When you got some adult beverages in your system.
Oh, gotcha.
It just works. And then here's the thing. If you see me sing this, you're not going to pay attention to me singing.
Ah.
You're just going to be so like, yeah, I can't believe he's singing that.
It's less of the song. It's more of the spectacle of you singing it.
Right.
Got it. Frank Shires.
Is there a good deal of horror when you hit this question, because I don't do karaoke much, although I do sing in the car with my daughter.
Uh-huh.
David, would you roll the one that I gave him about three choices. Which one did he pick? Okay, sure. Country Roads, John Denver.
Almost Heaven, West Virginia.
I like this.
Blue Ridge Mountains.
And you know what? The killer on it is the chorus. Nobody cannot sing the chorus.
Oh, yeah. I would put that up there with the Sweet Home Alabama, and that there are some that are just like everybody's anthems. That if you hear that, if you're a Sweet Home Alabama, if you hear
Take Me Home, that's a jam. That's a jam.
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice. I like that.
I mean, outside of that state, I mean, everything else
about
it.
How about you, Drew?
So there was a handful of days after I was in college where I went to this place called the Irish Immigrant up on the University Ave.
Okay.
And they had a killer karaoke, and I found myself usually singing something by either the Killers or by the Strokes.
Wow. How very millennial of you.
Never heard this before.
Oh, you never heard the Strokes? I don't know why. It was also something that was a perfect byproduct of many adult beverages, where you just have that feeling where you're like, you know what? My voice could be gravelly enough if I needed to. Sure thing. I think I played a lot of Rock Band also as well. This was a big song in Rock Band.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I just, the one thing about karaoke, right? Like, the one thing I know that is when you're around it and everybody is singing and they're having fun, yeah. No matter what, it's just not a bad song. During karaoke.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
It's really not a bad song. Whatever the person can't really sing.
But anybody that goes there with the intent of like, I can't wait until I can sing because I'm going to sing better than anybody else will.
You're a jerk.
There are people who do that.
It's that same thing where it's like, I'm going to go to the batting cages. I also played a little bit of
Let me tell you. The crowd knows who you are, too.
Yes.
And we see them.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe the last time. Because I've been lately with my friends, we've been doing karaoke at home.
Right,
and by the
right.
way, that's even better. When you're with friends, multiple microphones, everybody's singing.
But yeah, you know the person that comes in is real serious. They don't really talk to anybody. You know what I mean? Yep. They're just, you know, by themselves. They brought their own mic cover to put over the top.
Really? Nope. I've not seen that.
What about you, David? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Yeah, well, so I don't really go to any bars. So I've never been to a bar and done karaoke. But my family, my mom loves karaoke. And so every family gathering we have, in particular this past Thanksgiving, she loves karaoke. She loves to use it as an excuse to sing conservatively like 4 or 5 Carole King songs and just really try to get everyone hyped on that.
And what about you?
For me, she will usually force me to do a Frank Sinatra song because she likes the resonance of my voice or something like that. And so this is the one that I sometimes will do.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
See, David somehow got cooler, and you guys all doubted me, but I said that guy gets even cooler.
Let me tell you something. I rocks. Now, and I'm not even joking. Frank Sinatra is a hero to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Frank Sinatra, real deal. Back in the day, he was one of the reasons, like, oh, I'm not going to perform at your establishment if people of color can't come in.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Oh, Frank Sinatra doesn't play.
I did not know that story.
Frank Sinatra, he did a lot. He used a lot of his power to be like, no. They can, my boy Sammy Davis, no, if he got to come through the back of the restaurant, we're not coming to perform. Okay.
Not a story that is told much.
No. And that's why I rocks with, matter of fact, you know what? I rocks with him so much. I think this weekend when we do a little karaoke, I'm going to go a little Frank Sinatra, man. I a lot of respect for old Frank, but you can't be that. May he rest in peace. Frank Sinatra. Some country music, Sweet Home Alabama.
Mm-hmm. How about some Linda Ronstadt?
I never heard. Who was that?
Seriously?
The 253, they said they would sing anything Linda Ronstadt.
What's she sing?
You know that song.
What's the biggest hit?
You know that one.
Oh, come on, you guys. That's terrible.
I really don't know.
Eagles, same time that the Eagles were recorded.
There you go.
Huge.
Oh, yeah, that helped, Frank.
See? Perfect.
You weren't born yet. I know that.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Cut on next. It's time for Seahawks legends. Leroy Hill, former Seattle Seahawks linebacker. He joins us. You listen to the Cairo Knights. I'm D. Scott.